From a world-class heretic, Qoheleth, an elder statesman who lived in Jerusalem in the 3rd century B.C. To him, the Jewish people's self-assurance was vanity, hot air, because he saw that the world is not fair. The good guys don't always carry the day. And you know, it's remarkable that this heretic was even included in the Jewish scriptures. But thankfully, the compilers did not care about conformity or consistency. They knew that wisdom often comes from heretics. From chapter 8 of Qoheleth, here's something that happens all the time, and it makes no sense. Good people get what's actually coming to the wicked, and bad people get what's coming to the good. I tell you, this makes no sense. It is smoke. When I determine to load up on wisdom and to examine everything that happens on earth, I realized that even if you keep your eyes open day and night, you'll still never figure out the meaning of what God is doing on this earth. Search as hard as you like, you're not going to make sense of it. No matter how smart you are, you won't get to the bottom of it. And so I am all for going ahead and having a good time, the best possible. That's from Peterson's Bible, The Message. That's my favorite translation. Thus spoke the teacher of wisdom. And if I were to pick one book in the Bible that is most closely aligned with our UU values, Qoheleth would be it. This morning I want to lift up a couple of perspectives from Qoheleth, and then I want to highlight a lesser known heretic who I think merits our attention, especially in the aftermath of the recent election. A bit about Qoheleth. He uses one word, kebel, 38 times. It's often translated vanity, or breathing, or breath. All is impermanent, like our breathing. I undertook great works, and then I reviewed all of my labors, and I saw that my pursuits were like chasing after the wind. But he doesn't despair. You remember that kid's song, "Nobody loves me, everybody hates me. Guess I'll go eat worms." Qoheleth doesn't wallow in self-pity. He says, since our world is not always fair, then it is up to us in each moment to recreate goodness and love. Since there are times when the levees will not hold and the best preparation will not save us, what then shall we do? He says, go thy way, eat thy bread with joy, drink thy wine with gusto. And whatever thy hands find to do, do it with skill. Goodness and love are not predictable outcomes. They must be recreated in every moment. And that is a Unitarian message. I want to look at another heretic, less known, from the Renaissance in Florence. It was a golden age. Education and social services flourished. There were 200 textile firms, 80 banks, 110 churches. People were drinking so much that the wine tax raised one-fifth of the city's income. But in the mid-14th century, all of this crumbled. The final blow struck in April of 1348. It arrived by boat. The bubonic plague, Yersinia pestis, a bacterium transmitted by fleas from infected rats. The plague of 1348 destroyed two-thirds the population of Asia and Europe. It was Asian in its origin. Mongol besiegers brought it to the port of Kaffa on the Black Sea, and from there, rats carried it aboard ships bound for the Mediterranean. Wherever the ships docked, epidemics broke out. In Florence, half the population died. In Siena, two-thirds. The plague swept Italy and France in 1348, Britain in 1349, and all of Northern Europe by 1350. Of those who survived, many felt that it was God's punishment. Some abandoned their faith or formed cults of Satan. Others became religious hysterics. Death became a morbid preoccupation. Into this context, something else happened. It centers upon one man, Giovanni Boccaccio, who wrote a remarkable book, The Decameron, a story of 10 young men and women of Florence named Pompanea, Filostrato, Emilia, Panfilo. Despite all of the suffering, these 10 make their way to a hillside outside Florence, and there for 10 days, living on the food and wine that they could schlep along, they celebrate, they laugh, they tell stories. Each one tells one story on each of the 10 days, 100 stories in all. 100 witty, licentious tales revealing every human capacity, sensual, tender, cruel, weak, self-seeking, ludicrous. All right, what's going on? With half the population dead in the streets, how could Boccaccio write about celebration and gratitude? For Boccaccio, our world is shaped not by rationality, but by possibilities. It was his genius that imagination transcends the data. Too often we try to fit our experience into categories. And if that's not possible, we dismiss it as nonsense. For Boccaccio, our imagination empowers and extends reality, even amidst tragedy. Especially amidst tragedy. But Boccaccio doesn't dwell on tragedy. The Decameron is his response to the plague. Those who are able should reclaim higher ground. He writes, "Try to flee those things which sadden the mind, since melancholy passions weigh on the heart. Turn off CNN, Fox, and your Twitter feeds. Seek those things that lead to laughter by which the heart delights, such as singing, playing instruments, or listening to stories." That's a slight modification of Boccaccio. What sort of stories do they tell? Stories about the agonies and ecstasies of life. On day 2, each of them tells a story about someone who attains unexpected happiness after a period of misfortune. On day 4, they tell love stories with unhappy endings. On day 7, they tell stories about tricks that are played by wives on their husbands, and so forth. What are the storytellers doing? They are seeking festa, allegrezza, piacere, entertainment, delight, joy. The stories are about colorful, contrary characters, each of whom is on the verge of becoming just a little more than their present self. There are whores and thieves, buffoons, liars, fools. And with all these colorful characters, Boccaccio topples all the assumptions about norms and reason and virtue. This is his genius. All these quirky turns of the imagination, these are not diversions from life. For Boccaccio, rational knowledge by itself is sort of a booby prize, because the essential aim of life is not to figure it all out and put it in boxes, because knowledge comes too early or too late to be of any real value. The essential thing is to love. For love is a child of time, and love playfully dances within memories and the imagination. At the end of the 9th day, Panfilo announces what the subject will be for the final day. He instructs his 9 companions, "Tomorrow I wish for each of you to tell a story of those who have acted magnificently in affairs of the heart. Hearing these stories will kindle your spirits to adopt a lofty course of action. And in so doing, our lives, which cannot be anything but brief within our mortal bodies, our lives will be perpetuated through our praiseworthy fame, which we should not only desire, but should strive for with every bit of our strength." Does this have anything to do with our post-election landscapes? Our goal in living, says Boccaccio, is neither perfection nor propositional truths. It's all about what's going on right now, right in front of me. We should engage it with every bit of our strength. Despite the devastation of the plague, and despite the exploiters of human fear, it is the telling of stories and the spirit of recreation which endured. Two heretics, Ecclesiastes and Boccaccio. Heretics pointing us toward spiritual maturity and wholeness. Indeed, toward ecstasy, literally ecstasis, moving out of stasis, out of stagnation and despair and indifference. Heretics invite you and me to take the risk of releasing our grip on truthiness, or whatever idols we might be very certain about. Let it go. Take a risk. Give your soul away, or pass it like a candle flame. Sing it out, or laugh it up the wind. Souls were made for hearing breaking hearts, for puzzling dreams, for remembering August flowers, and forgetting hurts. Those who talk of saving souls, they want the world to be in alphabetical order. I will spend my soul playing it out like sticky string into this world so that I can catch every last thing I touch. I ask you in joining me in reading the words of the epilogue, which will be projected onto the screen. This is entitled Risk. The author is unknown. Please join me in this reading. To laugh is to risk appearing the fool. To weep is to risk being called sentimental. To hope is to
risk involvement. To
may it be so.